Reading returned to Medeski Stadium on Saturday with eyes on getting back to winning ways, only to succumb to a pretty bog-standard Blackburn team and lose for the third game in a row. Welcome to episode 203 of the Tireless Den podcast with your host Mark Mayo, back in the host chair once again. And, well, basically the theme of this week is that the numbers don't add up. And to do the math with me this week is Simeon Pickup, aka Bucks Royal, the editor of the Tireless Den website. How's it going, mate?
Deflated, to be honest. One of those days that just seemed like a hark back to the worst days of Stam and Clement, but hopefully we can get over it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I remember asking you a question when Ollie hosted last week, saying, what's going to happen first? The chances are going to dry up, or we'll actually start taking them? And I don't think either have happened just yet after the weekend game. Before we crack on, then, just another thank you, of course, to our Patreon subscribers who can continue to give generously to our cause and continue to show the appreciation. And for anyone who wants to go into our virtual tip jar, the link is always on the podcast, the article, and on the website and whatnot. And we always very much appreciate that, especially as we rise on a bit of an early Sunday morning podcast recording to talk about a defeat. And also some site news as well. We are currently advertising a few roles that people want to get involved with the website and lend us a helping hand of their own. And particularly for people who are starting their perhaps journalism career, these are fantastic opportunities to work alongside ourselves and sort of learn the trade as it were. And also for those, you know, if you're a bit older, you work 9 to 5 and whatnot, you just fancy yourself as having a bit of a creative edge. We're absolutely there for having the people like yourselves come on board. And we're currently looking for assistant editors on the website, writers, as we pretty much always are, and anyone with a video sort of emphasis who wants to take charge of our YouTube channel. Video producers are very much something we're keen on bringing on board. So something for the listeners to consider. And we'll move on now and consider what went wrong against Blackburn.
The Tilehurst End podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Sim, I'm going to throw a phrase at you that kind of defines where I view this team at the moment. And that's that this is the anti-Stam team. We, in that year, we got to the playoff final under Stam. We kind of defied the stats in a good way because we were rubbish, effectively, if you look at just the numbers, but we did really well. Now, if you look at the stats, we're doing quite well, but we're just not getting the results.
I think it just shows how much transition we're in, to be honest. We've got some good players. We've certainly improved the squad over last year and did a good job in terms of getting poor players out as well, but it does take a while to get them properly clicking. And that's not just about getting them working well together on the training ground, but really getting them used to just scoring goals and winning games. It's quite simple, but it's a habit that is difficult to get into. And it's not something you can just get into really quickly and expect them to do immediately, as we found out so far. And there are going to be games like this when the opposition find us out, when they really know how to play against us. And I guess really it's a learning curve, not just for the players and for the fans, but also for the manager. Jose Gomez needs to work out how to get the most out of this team, how to properly manage people like Puskas and Pele, who are coming into very different environment to what they've been in before. I know Pele had a few games at Nottingham Forest, but particularly for someone like Puskas, who's got such big expectations on his shoulders, he's being asked to be the star man of this team, having not really played at Championship level before. He's impressed, say, for the under-21s at the Euros for Romania before, but coming in and being asked to be the star man of a team in the Championship is a very different thing for him to do. And although they can make big improvements on the training ground and get a lot of shots away, get a lot of shots on target away, to be able to add that clinical edge onto the top of that and to make sure that we're, say, ruthless in front of goal, that we're really improving in all areas and getting the wins at the end of that, it's a long process.
Yeah, and if you look at the numbers so far, you'd almost think that we got that process nailed, because Puskas, for me, obviously, you know, the star man pressure, you can say, and the all-round game quality that you need to have, perhaps he doesn't have yet. But in terms of, you know, getting getting the shots on goal, we are the third highest team in the Championship for shooting. We've had 14.4 per game so far on average. We're the third highest team for key passes. We've made 88, and again, we're the third highest team for chances being created in the short range passes. So working the ball into the box, we've made 73 chances that way. So we're not doing badly in that sense. We've had the fourth highest pass percentage success rate, which is 80.6%. Most successful dribbles, 94. And in that, we've had the sixth highest unsuccessful dribbles with 59. And final stat of this sort of barrage is that we're the sixth most fouled team in the league. So we're dribbling well, we're passing well, we're shooting, but we're not scoring. So is it a case that in the final third, it's just, you know, a bit of bad luck, we're not finishing right? Or is it a case that perhaps our decision making isn't quite there at the last minute, and that we do the hard bit right, but when it gets to the easy bit, putting the ball in the back of the net, it's just not there?
Well, it's psychological as well, of course. You mentioned Stam earlier. What he was really good at was making sure the psychology was right in this team. Obviously, didn't go well in the second season that he was here, but in that first campaign, it was really good. Everyone knew their jobs and psychologically were on point throughout the game, whether it was Alhabsi keeping his focus and keeping us in an awful lot of games throughout that season, Kermigan scoring goals regularly, and also particularly with us seeing out so many wins when we went 1-0 up, that takes a strong psychological edge that I think this team at the moment doesn't quite have. And whether that reflects more on the players who are coming in and perhaps have a different psychology to the players that we've already got, or if it's more on Gomez or a little bit of both, we can't really know at the moment until we've properly let this run its course. But psychology is the problem for me. Also shown with the amount of times we've gone 1-0 down this season and just haven't been able to turn it around. I think we've lost all the games that we've gone behind in. And that does show that we need to properly work out how to deal with those situations when we've got so many new players, quite a lot of young players as well, actually. When we're relying on people like Swift and Ajaria, who maybe not really young, they're not rookies, but they're not the kind of experienced veterans that you really want to rely on when you're in a really rough spot. They don't have that proper hardened edge to them that players like Kermigan and Williams and Alhabsi did in 16-17 that we could rely on so much.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because our defence, on the other hand, I suppose you would say is pretty experienced, with the exception of Tom McIntyre. You've got Mark Morrison, who knows the game pretty much as well as any Championship defender. Obviously, Liam Moore's been around quite a lot, Yeardom, and Jordan Obiza came back into the team this week, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But for the defensive stats, it's kind of the opposite. We're the fourth highest clearance makers with 183, so we're having to deal with things quite a lot. We're the fifth lowest for interceptions. We've made 55 interceptions, the highest team making 118. So we're well off the pace there. We've made the fourth highest saves, 24. The second highest unsuccessful touches as well, 138, and the second most dispossessed with 98. So that, for me, paints a picture that the defence is having to be really busy. And is this a tactical issue or is this an individual issue? Because for me, it's a tactical one, because the players that we are playing, you know, you've got a midfield three of Ajaria, Swift and Pele. You're asking a lot of Pele in that. And you don't have wingers who are tracking back in the, you know, we think of previous teams, Gareth McCleary would track back quite well. Joby McEnough would track back very well. Last season, we knew the likes of Mo Bower just didn't do it, or Yaku Meite just didn't do it. This season, there's just no one to do it full stop. So are we making a rod for our own back in a sense? We're playing such an attacking formation, and as we're not scoring the goals, maybe this formation is just kind of designed to concede the sort of goals that we are conceding, and we're just not outscoring our opponent.
Certainly a tactical issue, but I think it says a lot that Gomez doesn't really know what formation he wants. You look back to the pre-season, we were playing kind of a 4-2-2-2 or a 4-4-2 diamond, then went into this 3-5-2 seemingly as a reaction to not being able to defend earlier on. and we're constantly kind of chopping and changing between formations. I know we've been starting with 3-5-2 recently, but we're then having to alter it, say, to a 4-4-2 diamond, as we seemed to do yesterday, or a 4-3-3 or whatever. And if you don't pick one formation that's effective with the players that you have and keep on working with it, you are going to lose some organisation and proper defensive solidity. And we are going to, as you said there, face a lot of shots. We're going to not be quite as solid defensively as we should be. And I guess it's lucky that we did bring in a good goalkeeper like Raphael, who can add more experience and is seemingly more commanding than Joel Virginia was. But we are just going to have to come up with a better formation, to be honest. I'm not completely down on the 3-5-2. I'm not completely against it, rather. But we do need to properly find some effective alternative way of playing, because other teams are going to work it out and really show us up.
I must admit, with the prowess of centre midfielders that we have, Ajayi, Swift, Pele and Winamotta, you can surely make a diamond out of that. And Jose Gomez has been playing diamond, as you say, and it's something that we as a team are capable of, certainly with the central strikers we have as well. So I do kind of think that we might slowly start nudging towards that as the season goes on, depending on how the 3-5-2 works out. Because again, in theory, it kind of works. But as we saw with the Blackburn goals, the first didn't take too long. Adam Armstrong curling in, a pretty decent effort from the D, but there's a lot of sort of defensive holes you can pick in it. The first is that Jordan Abiyi is caught quite high up the pitch, and that then draws McIntyre over. The idea is that McIntyre kind of acts as a left back then, in the same way that Liam Moore has been acting as a right back when Andy Yeardham's been caught up the pitch. Unfortunately, McIntyre just doesn't really get over enough and doesn't actually really stop the ball coming in. Then you can see that it drops for Armstrong, and Yeardham has actually pressed in so narrow that he's just got so much time. There's no players around him. The likes of Ajayi and Swift aren't there, and Pele sort of, you know, got a man basically. So, you know, that's 1-0 and 2-0. I always think it's so... You know, a sign of a rubbish team, basically, when you concede a 2-0 goal straight after the break, because surely coming out after half-time, you're ready, you're the team on top, you're the one who's going to take control of the game and make the other team work to maintain their lead. But we just don't do that. I mean, it's not the first time we've conceded like that as well. And Sim, I don't know what your take is on the second goal, but just for me, it's hard to pinpoint any one particular problem in it, because there were just so many to sort of cascade down.
I think for both of them, really, it's just passive defending. It's players kind of just not knowing their jobs. You need someone to just properly be really aggressive, get stuck in and close down the danger, particularly for the first one, when we do have a few opportunities to tighten it up and deny Blackburn a crossing opportunity or a shooting opportunity, and nobody just clears their lines and gets stuck in, particularly when there's a bit of a pinball for the second one as well. It's just, you want someone to just put their foot in and just clear it, to be honest, to really be sure of what they're supposed to do. But this is the thing with the back three that I think I was a little bit unsure about when we brought it in originally. You can put in more defenders, you can put in more centre-backs, and this essentially becomes a back five in certain circumstances. But if you're not organised enough, it's no better than a back four. And if we are going to stick with it, if we are going to stick with the back three, it's absolutely fine. But we do need to properly nail it down and get some proper consistency there. Because at the moment, we're also looking at having to try to chop and change a lot of defenders as well. Obviously, Abita came in on the left. Morrison looks like he's injured. Miazga was injured. I think McIntyre was brought off. He's been brought off twice now in the last two games tactically. Blackett had to come in as well. There's a lot of inconsistency there. And when you do have players chopping and changing in a new formation as well, there's going to be those doubts. There's going to be players not knowing what their job is, not being quite sure what to do. And when that's the case, you concede sloppy goals.
And then Reading got to the point where, you know, John Swift hit the post and then scored basically a carbon copy of that shot a few moments later. 2-1 going into the last 15 minutes. And teams of your, whether it's Reading or you know, just better teams generally, you do get the sense that they're capable of dragging out points having played badly. And it's certainly, you know, probably a very different podcast that we're having now if Reading go and get the point, because it's a, you know, resilience and momentum is being kept and all that sort of stuff that we like to talk about. But that's obviously not the case with this game, Sim. And why didn't Reading, you know, did you feel that they actually really threatened in that last sort of 10 minutes? Did Reading actually build up ahead of steam? And was Jose Gomez, or is Jose Gomez, generally, more generally speaking, a sort of manager who really knows how to build a comeback? Because you said earlier that his sort of, you know, his ability to drag us back from being a goal down and maybe two goals down is kind of limited. Are we feeling that's a case of the players or tactics, or, you know, why weren't we able to come back yesterday?
It's more the players for me. I think just psychologically they didn't have that edge. They didn't have that reaction. You go back to Reading teams of the past, as we've done, there'd be a couple of players yelling at other ones, just really getting into them, really getting stuck in and really just driving up the standard, to be honest. But I look at that team that we put out yesterday, there's a lot of new players, there's a lot of players who are just don't really seem to be wanting to take responsibility. I know we had Morrison, obviously he went off, but after that you're looking at players like Puskas and Swift, Ajaria. I don't see any of them really getting stuck into their teammates and really yelling at them, getting angry and firing them up, basically. And it just seemed passive, it seemed tame, it seemed limp towards the end of the game. There was no real kind of drive and push to get that equaliser, which we weren't out of it. When you're 2-1 down at home, you're never out of it, especially against a team like Blackburn. No disrespect to them, they're not a team towards the top of the table. We were capable of getting that equaliser, but if you don't have that drive, if you don't have that real spirit and belief that you can get back into it, you're not going to. And we didn't look close to doing it in the end.
Yeah, that's the boiler for me, is that we're just not close to doing it. It's not like we got back to 2-1 and had three great chances that we, you know, and a penalty shout. There were a couple of penalty shouts during the game, but, you know, quite frankly, if you don't get them, then they're almost not worth talking about, in my opinion. And something else not quite worth talking about just yet is the idea that Jose Gomez is under pressure for his job. Three defeats in a row, you know, 8 games into the season with a you know, couple of wins in the League Cup to go alongside that. It's just not something that I will be talking about just yet on the podcast. Final point I want to discuss then, Sim, before we go on into the podcast and all the rest of the podcast, the selection that we've had. We talked about formation. Personnel-wise, Jordan Obita brought in left wing-back for Omar Richards, who for me, I just don't think had really done anything wrong. Rino Motta in and out the side. Not really been the player that he was last season so far, but Pele, for me, hasn't really done enough to justify being the clear first choice, certainly in the long term. And then we've also got Lucas Jau, who I want to mention as a player that's just, does he need to be taken out of the team and have a bit of an impact sub sort of role? With Lucas Boye and Yaku Mate arguably having better seasons so far, you've got three players there, Pele, Jau and Obita, who, for me, I think we're running out of reasons to think of why they started on Saturday.
I think it was fine playing Obita. You're going to have to play him at some point. He's built up his fitness for the under-23s. He's getting back into it. Obviously had the game at Plymouth recently, and sooner or later you are going to have to give him a start at Medeski. And I think we have to just kind of take it as a given that he's not going to be at his best. He is going to need time to get back into it, and essentially you're looking at throwing that performance, that first one back. He just needs to get used to it, needs to get back up to speed, get used to being back in front of a home crowd. Essentially, and that is a big burden for him to, big hurdle for him to get over. And in the long run, he'll probably look back at this game as being useful. We all will. As his first game back properly in front of properly in the league, and it's more of a long term thing for him. I wouldn't be too worried about that. I am annoyed about Rino Motta and Pele though, because although Pele has his uses, he's probably a more natural fit as a holding midfielder in terms of being able to sit quite deep and get on the ball. But Rinomota did really well last weekend, and when a player's been out of the side for so long, not really having done too much wrong, and then you give him an opportunity in the side and he does pretty well, as he did up against Middlesbrough, to then take him out again just seemed like bad management of Rinomota. I don't know what he's going to be thinking. Does he have to do more in his next, say, appearance in the cup, or what is it? I imagine he'll play against Wolves, but it's still frustrating for him that he's done well against Middlesbrough and been taken straight out. Zhao, on the other hand, hasn't impressed me at all this season. He got a goal and I think got an assist for Ajara up at West Brom, but generally he gives the ball away far too cheaply. He doesn't hold it up. He doesn't do the simple stuff well enough. He just loses the ball really easily. And when you've got someone who I thought did quite well up at Middlesbrough in Lucas Boyer, I think he was worth another go just to give us a bit more guile, a bit more ingenuity going forwards. Wasn't brilliant against Middlesbrough, but certainly showed a spark that we probably should have built on. And giving him 5 minutes at the end of that game was just... it's an odd decision when so little is going right for us in a game and you do have a creative player who's ready to come onto the pitch and offer something new. We could have done that, particularly in the number 10 role, which seemed to be where Lucas Zhao was in the second half. When you've got a proper specialist in that position in Lucas Boyer, it's odd management from Jose Gomez that he's got that clear switch that he can make and he leaves it so long before he does it.
Yeah, and it goes back to the thing with Zhao, and I remember we said it at the time that if we were going to sign Lucas Zhao, and after the summer of, you know, tightening the purse strings and everything, and we sign Lucas Zhao and we say, you know what, we've taken a hit, but he's really important to the team, we're going to play him every single game and he's going to score 10-15 goals for us this season, and that is that. And you say, okay, fair enough, that's a plan. But we signed Puskas 2 days later for even more money, and something didn't seem right about it. And if we, you know, if we do go on and they both score loads of goals this season, then it's fair enough. But if one of them fails, then it inevitably draws questions about the nature of our planning, the nature of our formations, our selection. Because as you say, I don't think Boyer's a bad player. Yaku Mate's not a bad player either, but he's not starting again, and he seems to be the first go-to man off the bench. So it's just questions over Gomez that, you know, for now, are serious questions, but obviously not job-threatening questions. We'll have to give him a good few weeks to start thinking about that, and hopefully we'll have turned around the form before then. So let's go into the mailbag and continue with the podcast and hear from what you think.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Anyone wanting to get in touch for the mailbag, of course, the usual channels are always open with the Facebook and Twitter pages of the Tarlhurst End and thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. for the emails, where we tend to get our more considered and longer thoughts. And I'm not saying that our tweets aren't always considered and long, but the first few tweets we got this week were Guy J saying, "It's not good when Reading are trending." Yep, on Twitter we were one of the UK's top trending teams because presumably we busted everyone's accumulator by losing at home to Blackburn. Biscuitier asking, "Will a boy ever be born that can swim faster than a shark?" I think the official answer to that is no. And Jacob South Klein asking, "Will the pain ever go away?" And I think as a podcast, we are united in saying no. So Sam Michael then with the first of the questions that myself and Sim will answer. Are we making the most of our bench? At the moment, we start a game with a plan. When it doesn't work, plan B, which seems to be to bring on Mate, doesn't work. So we've talked about sort of plan A and plan B and formations and whatnot. Is this a case again of the players just not really fitting into defined enough roles when they come off the bench? Because if you look at the players on the bench who came off on Saturday, we talked about Boyer and Mate. The thing is that arguably neither of them do have a perfect position. At least the one thing you can say with Zhao and Puskas, they are strikers, that is that. With Mate, he's kind of 80% striker, 20% winger. Boyer, perhaps the other way round. And when you're bringing them off the bench in this sort of scenario, maybe do you want players who are a bit more, you know, defined in their role?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of those where it's kind of hard to come up with a proper plan B if you don't know how to do it properly, which is a bit of a fudgy answer, I guess. What I will say is, it just seems, well, I can't get mad around it, to be quite honest with you. My impression is that Gomez just kind of wants to throw on players rather than he actually has a clear plan B, which goes back to what I was saying earlier about having lots of different formations that he's not really kind of worked, not really settled on. It seems like he's just trying to find a formation that fits all of his attacking players in, essentially. It goes back to the Charlton game when we brought wingers on for wing backs for some reason.
Against Middlesbrough, we went to basically 4-2-4, didn't we?
Exactly, yeah. We brought off Rinnemhota and sacrificed our midfield stability and went to essentially a front four. I know Gomez said that Puskas had kind of been as a number 10, but in reality, it was just basically a front four. He seems to kind of either massively overplay his hand or massively underplay his hand. Underplay his hand in terms of leaving it far too late to bring Lucas Boye on when he should have come on far earlier, or overplaying his hand, like going to a 4-2-4 at Middlesbrough or swapping his wing-backs for wingers at Charlton. It seems like he doesn't really know what he wants to do, that he kind of is just about settled on his 3-5-2, and then the alternative isn't another formation, isn't another clear formation. It's the alternative is just bring on all the strikers, all the creative players, and see if it will work. And that is really going to be a problem for us if we keep on sticking with that. I'd like to see something more of a 4-3-3, something that keeps the midfield shape and essentially just sacrifices a defender for a striker, but actually keeps some kind of shape to the team rather than just going too gung-ho. But again, whatever it is, Gomez needs to sort it out and keep going with it. And it's easier said than done. It's easy for us to talk about it on a podcast and say, you need to do this, you need to do that. He's the guy who's got to come up with the decision. And if he doesn't, then that's what he's going to be judged on.
Well, we have got a sort of a bit of a gimme in midweek, if you like, a bit of an experimental game, if we want to use it as that, at Wolves in the Cup. But speaking of which, in terms of selection, Royals fan 36 says, if we're going to stick to the back three, Blackett has to play on the left of the three. He's the only left-footed defender, but I don't like the back three anyway. Why did we sell all of our wingers? We can't switch the system. Should we recall Barrow if there's a recall clause? Well, I do certainly agree on the point of lacking wingers, in the sense that I'm sure Gareth McCleary perhaps doesn't have the legs of his youth, but I wouldn't, you know, if he's talking about bringing wingers on for wing-backs, he'd be a pretty decent option in my opinion, perhaps maybe better a couple of years ago. But Barrow, as far as I'm aware, there isn't a recall clause to bring him back. I think Jose Gomez made kind of pretty clear in his selection and his, you know, thinking that Barrow isn't a long-term option for Reading. So when it comes to the back three, I might think that Tom McIntyre's left-footed. I can't say that with 100% certainty. But Blackett, Sim, the idea of him playing in that three, is that something that works for you? I must say it's not a bad idea, because Blackett has played centre-back in his career. He's obviously played left-back quite a lot. He talked about earlier, for the first goal, McIntyre had to kind of become a left-back to deal with it, something that he wasn't quite capable of doing. It would therefore make sense that you have someone like Blackett as the third defender.
Yeah, and Blackett's done well as a left-sided centre-back for us a couple of years ago, going back to the 16-17 season. Again, he seemed to do pretty well. I'd be worried if he's trying to do over Richardson, the beta, both available. We shouldn't have to do that. In terms of the back three, Blackett does give us a bit more aerial presence, a bit more strength, I think, than McIntyre. It's a decent option. I think it's worth a go. I'm unsure about kind of chopping and changing too much. When we have been having Miazga in and out of the side, Morrison in and out of the side, with him going out injured. So again, we just need to come up with a back three that properly sticks and we can properly keep going with. Whether that's Blackett or McIntyre, not too sure at the moment.
I'm not too sure. Do we know how long that Miazga's out for?
I think it's short term rather than long term. I think,
yeah.
Gomez was asked a short time ago and he said it wouldn't be too long, but Blackburn will be too early for him. Hopefully we can have him back for midweek or next Saturday. That seems relatively realistic.
Yeah, obviously with Morrison as well as a potential injury worry. That's the, you know, as Sima said, the ideal thing for a back three is consistency. And I can understand McIntyre coming in. Basically, he was the only player who was around to come in, along with Osho, another young player. So McIntyre's been given his chance, and I think it's probably been clear from the games that he's played that he's not quite championship ready. And I think that you do that with young players quite a lot. Bring them in, give them a few games. If they're brilliant, then you keep them playing. And if they're not, then you can move them back into the reserves. And then play players like Michael Olise and Danny Loder are currently in there, and they're doing quite well for the reserves. And, you know, it's about sort of coming in waves as a footballer at that age. And hopefully he can come back stronger when he does. But I do agree. I do think Tyler Blackett would probably be a better option at the moment at centre back. And the final question of the week comes from Mark Lawrence. Says, how many times do we have to lose by fine margins or quote unquote be unlucky before serious questions are asked? I'm an optimist and happy to give loads more time. Just interested in your thoughts. And I think it's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's that case of what goes first. Is it, you know, does the luck change, or does the things that made you only a goal behind go away and you've suddenly become two or three goals behind? I remember in the season when we're back in the Premier League with Brian McDermott, we lost about two or three games by some dodgy refereeing decisions, and we were very angry about it. Obviously Newcastle beat us at home, I think, with a handball goal, and then after a few weeks we kept losing, but we no longer had the refereeing decisions to blame. And that's the true sign of a team is. And obviously we got relegated that season. In terms of what's going to happen this season, Sim, I mean, It is just a case of having to wait and see.
It's about the manager response, really. I think even if you go back to 17-18, when obviously ended up really badly with Stan getting sacked and then Clement coming in and just keeping us up. Earlier on in the season, we weren't dreadful. We were kind of just getting on the wrong end of those fine margins. There'd be games where we perhaps could have won but just didn't have that extra edge that we'd had the previous season to properly get through with. It's just about how the manager reacts in the long term. If Gomez can do that, then there's no problem. We're going to look back on this period and just not really mind about it at all. But if he doesn't react properly, then it is a problem.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that one goes on. And that's it from Mailbag. As I say, if anyone wants to get in touch for next week's show, the usual channels are always open, and we'll now move on to News Bites and talk about three new signings for Reading Football Club.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Sim, I'm not sure if you're aware of the name of Augustus McGiff. He kind of sounds like a superhero in a child's cartoon or something, but that is the young lad we've just signed from New York City FC. He scored 19 goals in 20 games last season for the under-16, under-17 side of the MLS team. And he has signed along with two other players for the academy this week. We've signed James Holden, a goalkeeper from Bury. Obviously, Bury, with their financial troubles and whatnot, their academy players, I suppose, you could just say they were free agents. So we picked up a goalkeeper from Bury. And we've also signed Femi Azeez, who was a Wealdstone player on a non-contract basis, apparently. And we'd sold... we lost one of our young goalkeepers to Arsenal in the summer, hadn't we, Sim? So it's no surprise to see us bringing a new keeper.
Yeah, we do have a lot of goalkeepers at the moment in down in the academy, so it's good to see we got that kind of that conveyor belt of talent coming through again. Obviously, Kenai Boyce Clark as well, Miles Roberts, another one, Luke Southwood out on loan, and yeah, it's good to see. But eventually, they're going to have to start getting some chance in the first team, because when we've got two senior goalkeepers like Walker and Virginia just kind of making up the numbers, it's a little bit frustrating for them. But hopefully sooner rather than later we can give some more opportunities out to the young goalkeepers.
Not really since Alex McCarthy have we been able to say that we have a development line for goalkeepers. Remember the likes of Jamie Young and McCarthy and Federici, all sort of semi, some of them did, some of them didn't quite come through the academy, and there was that sort of, you know, ascension to the first team that proved very successful, that we've basically gone away from recently. And as you say, hopefully it's something that we're capable of bringing back. And, you know, it's nice to see us able to cast our net far and wide enough to scout the MLS as well, which shows some good potential. And speaking of the youth teams, the under-18s, they beat Swansea to start the month and lost to Chelsea 2-1 on Saturday. They're currently 8th in the Premier League South table, 5 points from 6 so far. They next play Derby on the 28th. The under-23s, they've had a strong September so far. They beat West Brom and Swansea. The latter was 5-0. Great goals on YouTube for anyone who wants to go and check those out. Some cracking finishes on the Medeski Stadium. However, at Craven Cottage on Friday night, they lost 5-4 to Fulham. Osho, Little, Coleman and Elise got on the score sheet. They were also 4-1 down before getting back to equalise and conceding in the last minute, which, you know, they're perfectly set for the Reading first team if that's what's going on. They're 5th in the Premier League 2 table at the moment. 9 points from 6 games. They next face Stoke at Adams Park on Monday the 30th. And finally, the women who, because we're recording this kind of early on Sunday, they haven't played this weekend quite yet. They were against Spurs in the Conti Cup. They won 1-0 at Liverpool on opening day and then lost 2-0 at home to Manchester City the last weekend. They've also made a signing of Lisa Marie Carlsen Utland, who scored versus Nigeria for Norway at the World Cup. So a couple of 3 Norwegian players I think we've signed this summer. So Reading women getting off to a relatively decent start then, with a win and a defeat so far in the league. So that is News Bites completed. We'll now move on to Big Game Preview.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
A couple of trips to look forward to this week then, Sim. That first game, Wednesday, 7:45 p.m. at Molineux, Wolves away. And this one, well, it's a weird one really, isn't it? Because usually we go to a team like Wolves in their sort of, you know, pomp as it were, and say, you know what, we're struggling at the bottom of the Championship and this is going to be a 3-0 defeat and we'll go in with our tails between our legs. But I'm kind of weirdly optimistic about this one. Wolves have started awfully, quite frankly, in the league and in Europe, basically. They'll surely, because their commitments and everything, this is the absolute lowest priority game they could probably play this season. They're going to rotate as much as they possibly can, you'd think. Are we going to rotate?
Would have thought we would a little bit, maybe take out a few players who are, well, just bring in some players who really want the opportunity to impress. And it's an opportunity for us to just take a game seriously and really give players who haven't had that chance in the first team to get in and really stake their claim. If we treat it as a game where we're just going to rotate and bring out players and give them a rest, then we're not going to do particularly well. But as you say, because Wolves are going to rotate a lot, it is an opportunity to say to people like maybe Lucas Boye, Andrew Rinomhota, who haven't played as much as they would have liked to this season, if you come in and start and impress, then that's your audition for the first team, essentially. That's your audition for the league side. So there's a lot to be gained from this game. I wouldn't take it too seriously in terms of being a must win or too much pressure to get a result. But if we can go there and put in a good performance and give a good account of ourselves, then I don't see why we can't come out of it feeling pretty optimistic.
Well, certainly. And one player who I would play is George Puskás, because I think he just needs minutes at the moment. He just needs to get as much sort of action, and playing against a Premier League's second string defence certainly won't be the hardest defence he's ever played against, and hopefully against a big team he might be that sort of big game player who finds that little bit of extra motivation when the cameras were on him at Cardiff. He obviously did, and hopefully at a Premier League team he'll find the extra 10% as well. In terms of the cup, you kind of alluded to it there. Is it basically, you know, we've got to the third round, we've had a couple of tricky-ish away games that we've gone and won. Is it basically okay for us to say, you know, the cup is, if it's cut adrift, then, you know, so be it?
It's about how we go out, essentially. If we go out having kind of gone out with our tail between our legs, having not giving a proper good account of ourselves, then it's going to be a real low. But if we can go up to Wolves and give a good performance, then it is going to be beneficial for us in the long run. And it's not luckily we're not one of those teams that are kind of too pressured into doing well in the cup. If we go out, it's not a huge problem, and we can move on from it. I'm not too worried about it. If we do play badly and go out, it's not the end of the world. It's just about keeping it in context and moving on.
Hopefully something that either way we can learn from as a team, and you know, maybe we will change formation and see what Jose Gomez is planning on. It's a bit of a roll of the dice for a lot of respects, as we said. So then on Saturday, we at 3 p.m. take on Swansea, who going to the Liberty Stadium, they're second in the league. You might think that's a pretty tricky trip, but their last three games, they'd scraped a 1-0 win away at Leeds, and then they've lost 1-0 to Forest and drawn 0-0 away at Bristol City. So very much a team that keep it tight and are defying expectations. I must admit, I thought they were going to be battling relegation this season given their financial woes, but they've done a very good job under the new manager, and we just have to hope, Sim, that these kind of cracks that might be appearing in the Swansea team are going to become a bit more apparent against us, and we have to hope that it maybe sort of a low pressure game in which we can thrive in.
Psychologically, we need to be right. Basically, we're going to be up against it because Swansea have started so well. But if we do play to that occasion, if we do kind of really psych ourselves up for it, then we've got every chance of getting a good result. If Swansea can go to Leeds and get a win, and I don't see why we can't get a decent result against Swansea if we do a good account of ourselves. And I guess to an extent that's going to start against Wolves. If we can react to the Blackburn game with a good morale booster in midweek, if we do that, then it'll give us a much better chance against Swansea. But even then, it's just about being psychologically right. And if we can do that, then we've got a half-decent opportunity.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a case of going to a Championship fixture, and in the Championship you've always got a chance. And Swansea, ignore the tables for the moment. They're a team that we can beat, and if we play well, we'll beat them. So I'll wait until after the Wolves game, Sim, to get your prediction for the Swansea match, because a 6-0 win or defeat might tempt us either way. But for the moment, for the prediction league, a little update on that. We were all wrong for Blackburn. We all threw our hat in for a win, just as we did against Charlton. We were all incorrect. So that's two home games in a row that we've written off. In terms of the overall league standings, I am currently in the lead on 8 points because I had 1-0 Boa a couple of weeks ago. Wim, Westy, Johnny are behind on 4. Ollie on 3. Handbags and yourself, Sim, on 2. So you're not quite in Jose Gomez territory at the moment, but a bit of pressure for the next couple of games coming up, and then we'll see how the rest of the season pans out as we chase that crown. So Sim, thank you very much for joining me on episode 203 of the Tarleton FM podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be back next week to talk about that Swansea game and obviously the Wolves game as well. It's a case really for Reading of being a bit disappointed by the home games, but that's the beauty of the Championship, is that you can turn up to pretty much any game and be relatively hopeful of getting a win. We go to Wolves and Swansea now, and two, a draw and a win, or maybe even a win and a defeat, it's a good chance to build some momentum. It's a good chance to take the pressure off. Maybe this season we're just going to be one of those teams that can't play at home and can play away. I guess we'll find out by this time next week. We'll see you then. Come on, your arse. Leave it.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems on your trail. Funny how the crumbs always leave a trail, even when it seems on your trail.
You